This is a session with Chad recorded on March 26, copyright 2011, New Grand View Incorporated, all rights reserved, and we're starting at 10:17 a.m. Hawaii time. Greetings, Zion.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hey, number one, are you ready? Let's go.
Okay. This is in regards to triangulation, and I've been
working... Oh, the downfall of non-physical. Oh, that'll be deliciously
right,
fun.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Okay, I've been working with the stuff that you've been giving me over the last couple of rewrites, and the one the other night was, there was this voluminous, but I kind of have some holes in my notes, so I want to clean up. And so my first question would be, before I even really get into all this, I was wondering if there's just a simpler formula that I can plug into my computer, because I can just program it.
No. Nope.
Maybe not. No?
Nope, because this is bigger. Your computer can calculate. Well, wait a second. This is your world. You know this. Your computer can calculate any number of possibilities, but until you get the visual of what the hell it is you're doing, you can't possibly have your computer decide every pair that would apply. So once you get the visual, then a formula is easy.
Okay.
But you got to get the visual, because you got flat plane geometry trying to validate a false premise. Okay?
Right.
Well, that's not too odd. That's pretty logical. Then you have frequency, which is sine, cosine, and the only reason we use that is because a graphing calculator can give you those coordinates of the wave, the phase, and the pitch. Well, and the only reason that you have that is so you can find the intersection points of that sine, cosine wave that then you can plot on a flat linear space. See, you're just noticing where peaks and troughs of two wavelengths intersect, which give you a way to converge it into a flat linear geometric space.
Yeah.
So you got to get the visual, and once that, then you're going to go, oh, okay. Now, you don't even have to have all this. Remember, we said if you can't remember, triangulate. But we've been saying that for a year or so now, and now everybody's all on it like they've all got a great big erection regarding it now. But they didn't then, but boy, they do now. So you got to get that pic. Once you get that picture, then it very simply will become you have A, B, C. A, sine, cosine. Then you have B, sine, cosine. Then you have C, minus cosine, minus sine, which runs your wavelength the opposite direction, which will actually give you definitively your X and Y axis completely. But the reason we do it that way is because visually, there is the potential, depending on which 3 points you're triangulating, your B angle could be on top of your A when you graph it. So now you've inverted your triangle. So if that's the case, instead of AB being your tangent, BA becomes your tangent. So the tangent that you draw off of, the second tangent, instead of being B1, A1, it would be A1, B1, because you would invert it. That's the point of inverting the second tangent. So if it is the case where your B angle was greater, plotted greater than your A angle, because we always say that A is what you're trying to calculate, you still can, but it's inverted. And that doesn't matter from a linear space as long as you invert your second tangent, which changes the other angle that you're trying. When you're trying to find out what A is to B, like what the value of A is going to BE.
Right, but also the ratio, right?
Well, precisely. But see, even if it's inverted, that ratio won't change that much. But it most certainly will have an effect on which coordinates fall within inside the triangulated parameters. So we took a very simple high school version of the visual pictorial. So then you could extrapolate that into no limits.
Okay. The first thing I don't get is, okay, once I've plotted the triangle, I'm getting from the triangle to the wave, you know, so am I going to see a wave overlaid over top of where the triangle is?
Yes, 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 yes. And that'll be from that A, B, C angle. A wavelength would begin off the tangent of your A angle.
Okay, so if my A point was at 0, 0,
okay,
then my B point was at like 4, 4.
No, no. And then my your B point won't be at 4, 4. Your B point on that same tangent would be 4, 0. Or minus
okay, we're gonna
4,
do it.
0.
Okay, okay, we're going to do it that way. Okay. So
yeah. Well, no, see, that's the point. You may be absolutely spot on, because if you do it as 4, 4, then what you're going to have is you're going to have a tangent that would sort of be like a backsplash line, and that's okay. That's not a problem. You'll just pull your second tangent parallel to whatever that AB line segment is. See, and then your time that you're gauging, you'll just value the spaces between the first two tangents, but your blocks would be at an angle. So even in that world, no problem, but you got to get the visual before any of that applies. Do you see?
Right.
And so just to say, here's the formulary to plug in the values, well, you're screwed because you got three sets of things going on simultaneously.
Okay.
Because this is to work with every application, where you are geographically, what the weather's going to be, what the stock market's going to be, what gold's going to be. But hey, it can be, if you could calculate your emotions or your feelings, you could even gauge how you're going to feel in a future experience.
Right. So,
so for everything, then yes, up, down, over, under, it makes no difference how you plot it, just so you know that your linear false premise of time should be parallel. Because if it isn't parallel, now time is not parallel, but your calculatable space of time is. Because we say there is no time.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll be in that world, absolutely. But see, then it becomes a pissing in the wind formula, and the determination is not are you going to get wet? It's how wet are you going to get?
Okay.
Good.
So,
okay.
When you said the second the parallel tangent, so that's on a different triangle, right?
It intersects your AC, BC line segments, and it does become the second tangent for the smaller triangle. And remember, your C angle would be shared. It would be C and C2. You see that same C angle?
So the second,
would
the second
be a part
triangle,
of two triangles.
The second triangle is inside of the first
very
triangle.
Very good. Very good.
Yeah.
And then look what you've done. You've now set a new tangent that you can calculate from there as well. And then the pinpoints within that tiny C, now you're triangulating a very small space. Rather than, you could triangulate from Toronto to Los Angeles to Florida. But then if you did that, when you triangulated that back down, you'd find yourself in a very, very small quadrant of Los Angeles that you could pinpoint exactly the same way you did in the large triangle.
Okay, so the large triangle gives you your big range, and then the smaller one gives you your more fine-tuning.
Can pinpoint it down to which cross street you're on in New York City. The same way your cell phones give you, it finds exactly where you are and then gives directions from there to where you want to go. Same,
right.
It's exactly the same. But now that makes it easy for us, but go back 20 years and ask us that question, and you wouldn't have had let's see, what's the kind way to say that? You wouldn't have had a fucking clue.
Yeah. So,
but now punching in coordinates is, No big deal.
Okay. So with the two triangles, am I going to plot the waves for each of them?
Yeah, you only have to plot them in the first when you're trying to find what A2 is.
Okay, and that's because they would both have the same wave, right?
Not necessarily, Neil. Because, see, your A2 value, your future value, see, that can be different. That's what you're calculating. So let's say you're doing rice. The price of rice at A1 is a dollar. And you calculate it out, and you find out the price at A2 is a dollar and a penny. Well, if you calculate it from that point, your sine values and cosine values, because you're a different place on the tangent, on the new tangent, would be different. Do you see? Your x and y values would also be different. So in that window, the answer is yes. Now, what you may find is that the pitch could be very close, but that's all predicated on where it plots, what your x and y values shift to.
But if I have a small triangle within a large triangle, the pitch would be the same.
Not necessarily. Not necessarily. Because you could pull a larger triangle even off your original triangle to find the B4 axis, and that very absolutely may be different. See, that's the thing. You would be correct if all this was geometry or all this was trigonometry. You're right, but it's not. This is a flat linear application of a vibrational accord.
Okay, so not only do the angles, but you're saying that the angles and the length of the sides would affect.
Yes,
okay.
They do.
Okay.
They do. Because that's the case, that's how you can accurately calculate what a future or past experience is precisely.
Okay.
Otherwise, to do it the way you're doing it could apply, but you're only going to get, well, that'd be a formula, Chad, if you's playing horseshoes or hand grenades and you's just trying to get close, that'd be okay. But you don't want close, you want a bullseye.
Okay. I'd like to walk through a simple example.
Well, ask questions.
Okay.
We can, but you've got to ask questions because this is going to be your creation, not our vomiting.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so let's say we're doing the price of rice. And I know three values today based on...
Well, A, B, C, label them.
Okay. Let's do currencies because I can pick three currencies. It's simple.
Fine.
So
if you're doing math, that's even easier. Because if you're doing currencies, currencies don't have a value. Currencies have a value based on another value. That's great. Then fine. Here we go. What's your first currency?
It'll be Canadian dollar. So
Canadian dollar to be traded to what?
The U.S. would be the reference.
If that's what you want to do. Okay, so you now have Canada, U.S. If you have Canada and you're buying U.S., what's that value?
We'll say 96 cents.
Okay, very good.
So what that means is
that it takes 96 cents Canadian to buy $1 U.S. Is that what you're saying?
That's what I mean, yeah.
Okay, so always go with the first currency as what you're converting to. We don't care. Just like, remember, we had the long conversation with that where X and Y are. It matters not to us, but sometimes it does to you all. So if we're being clear, you won't shoot yourself in the foot later. Okay, your second currency, pick two.
My second currency would be the euro,
mm-hmm.
And that would be 75.
The euro to what, Chad?
To the U.S. dollar.
No. Let's make it interesting. Make it the dollar to the Great British pound.
Oh, okay.
See, you don't have to fuck it that out way. You can get wild with it. This is
really fun. Okay. So we'll say euro to Great British pound. So we'll go 1.2, so we'll call that 120.
So 1.20 euros cost that much to buy 1 great British pound. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm just pulling it out of the air, but we'll
that's fine. But it's we got to be clear because that's the reason this works is so that you get it from a visual standpoint. Okay, now pick your C point.
Okay. My C point would be, let me see, Australian dollars to Swiss francs.
Fine. So you have Australian dollars, and you want to know how many or less it's going to take to buy 1 Swiss franc.
Yes.
Okay, and then that'll be a value. Now, if you're going to do currencies, you know all the way out to the pips, it'll take it to the 1,000th decimal point.
Okay.
And you want to do that. No rounding. This is precise.
No rounding, yeah.
No rounding.
Okay.
Now, so now your A value is, what did you say the first one was 96.96?
Our first one was just 96, and our second
no,
one was 1.96.
Okay,
we'll do 0.96 for the first one.
So add a zero. Get it to the 1,000th.
Okay. 960. And 1.2.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So your A value on your triangle, let's just take your big graph paper and draw your big X down the middle. Y is up and down. X is left and right. And then you have your value on the tangent of the center. You'd go up, what did you say, 0.960.
Yeah. We didn't give a value for the third one. Does that matter yet?
Well, you will.
Okay.
So you go up 0.960 dot. And if you want to move your decimal point over one so that you're going up 9 blocks to make it your visual easier, we don't care. It makes no difference because, you know, your pitches aren't going to be shifted from that point. But just for your if you want to do that way, fine. Makes no difference. Hell, if your graph's big enough, you can go up 96. You see? 96 marks. It makes no or 960.
Well, I'm working with my computerized graph paper, so I just type in. I'm just using 960 with no decimals for the U.S. to Canadian. So
fine.
It'll add decimals later. So
fine.
Anyway, that's
fine.
Thousands of values.
Fine. That's fine. Because
so
see, at the end of the day, as long as you do the same thing to all of them, it makes no difference.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. So I've got the first value is plotted at 960 on the y-axis vertically,
uh-huh.
And the second one is plotted at
1200. Whoa! Now wait now. So your x and y value would be y is 960 and x is 0.
Yes.
Good, because you got to have both. Remember that's what had y'all ready to blow your brains out a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Okay. So you have that now. Okay. Now, B, your value is
1200 on the X. So it's zero.
Now wait a second. Now that's going to be your B value is going to be above your A value. Isn't that interesting?
Yep.
Now,
yep.
So here the very thing we said right out of itch you've fallen into. Great.
Yeah.
So now, instead of an ABC triangle, you actually have a BAC triangle, okay? So now, instead of the AB tangent, you actually have a BA tangent.
Right.
And that's no problem because you will now invert how you label your third or your second tangent. So instead of A1, B1, it'll become B1, A1. Or actually, A1, B1. You'll invert it from whatever your original tangent is.
Okay, so You mean my third point that I'm putting? I'm going to have to do.
No. You'll go ahead and do your third point, but then you've got to pull a second tangent. Your future space, your future value. That's how you make the new smaller triangle.
Okay.
Because remember, on your other, the way we had it before, you had the, on the AC line segment, you had the angle A, and when you pulled the second tangent, you had the second little triangle. That was A2. Got it?
Got it.
And you were trying to find the future value of A2.
Okay.
So now what you have done, because your B is above your A, you've got to invert your second tangent that you're going to pull. But that's just a good point. It's a good practice way to know it, because many times that'll be the case. So no problem. Okay, now plot your C.
Okay, so my C, I'm going to plot that on the x-axis, right?
Correct.
And that would be Australian dollars buying Swiss francs. So hypothetically, we'll say 1.4. So in my case, that's going to become 1,400.
No. Oh.
Yeah.
Yes. 1,400.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah. So that ends up at X is 1,400, Y is 0.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, choose your time segment.
7 days.
Okay. So you can take, you have a great number moved over, so you could make a great day. You have, what, 1,400 boxes to calculate, so you could even make each block be almost an hour. Well, let's see. Divide it up ever how you want to. Or you could make it 30 days and move over 30 blocks. But since you have such a wide variance there, it makes no difference. But just know you're...
Okay, so the time is going to be on the x-axis, you mean?
No. You're going to pull another tangent to create the second triangle, and that's going to be your space of time.
Oh, okay, I get it.
Yeah.
So because I've got 1,400, I could do the seven-day thing because I could break it into blocks of 200.
Fine. Yeah. That's fine. That's fine. So every 200 blocks is a day.
Yes.
Fine. See, but you could also do this in 30 minutes for 30 minutes.
Okay, you know what? Let's just make it really simple. We'll say it's a 14-day cycle because I got 1,400.
Fine.
I just want to keep
fine.
It simple. Okay,
fine.
14-day cycle.
Fine.
All right, second triangle.
Fine. Makes it, see, because when you're trying to validate a false premise, it's up to you.
Yeah.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that.
Well, and it's simple because what you're bouncing from or off of doesn't make any difference at all. You're just trying to find that future. And we say that the past, present, and the future are both now. So it's just a mathematical calculation of the now and the now.
Mm-hmm.
You see? If you take sugar and water, and you have sugar and you have water, and you mix them together, they're still sugar and water.
Exactly.
It's just
okay.
Your future experience is a sugar water rather than sugar and water. Well, the future value of that is going to be, you're just gauging what the future value is based on your larger now.
Okay. Yep,
now, I know there's more, but just one more little thing we want to pitch in. What if your C points that you chose put C to the left of your AB tangent?
So that would be in the quadrant to the left.
That's correct.
Right?
Now, if that's the case, then guess what you've got to do? You've got to pull your AB. They've got to become the minus sine cosine, and your C becomes the sine cosine.
Oh, okay.
Remember how we
so.
Flipped the tangent? Now, we couldn't do this with other folks, but analytically, you get the point. If you if you move it a different direction, you just have to get your frequency. Frequencies always go from the left side toward the right.
Counterclockwise?
No. Not necessarily.
Okay,
but I'm talking about
you mean just linear, okay.
Mm-hmm. Because actually wavelengths go in every direction, but not from a linear perspective.
Right.
Remember, it's the pipe organ. It's the noise coming out of a pipe organ. It doesn't come out like water out of a water hose. It goes everywhere.
So the wave is the helical geometry.
Yes. Your pitch. That's your pitch.
Yeah.
Good.
So can you explain to me why I would flip it from having my C be the minus to putting it over on the left and making
because
my
the wavelength, the wavelength would never intersect. Because if your C is to the left of your AB tangent,
mm-hmm.
okay, and you pull a minus cosine from that angle C, it's going to go back away from your original tangent. And your sine cosine waves from your AB are going to go to the right. So they most certainly would never intersect. And if you pulled it that way, you'd find that those currencies would have no future value.
Okay, so because the wave is going from the... Okay, is the wave going from the left to the right or the right to the left? What did you say?
It always starts at a tangent and goes to the right.
To the right,
and if it's minus sine, minus cosine, it always goes from the tangent to the left.
Okay, I get it. So can we just
the same way the same way that you'd say if you were going in the future of time or the past of time? See, time always goes forward, and history always goes back.
Yeah.
Now that's not the case, but if you're going to prove it linearly, you got to look at it that way. Otherwise, you could get ahead of your behindness.
Ahead of your behindness.
Well, you'd know the future value, but you wouldn't know the present value, because value hadn't been historically reclamated.
Right. Okay,
your variable would be, you'd have so many variables that you'd know the X and Y, but you wouldn't know the value to find the new future value.
Okay.
That's a bit confusing, but when you go back and re-listen, you'll go, oh, yeah. The reason it's got to be this way is because we're plotting this geographically.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just so you get the visual. Because you are absolutely right, baby. Once you get this visual, then you absolutely can pull a formula that you plug into your thing. It'll even do it for you. You can make it as a fucking app on your iPhone.
Yep.
Just like you can type a bit in your bill at a restaurant and calculate what 15% is, it'll tell you instantly.
It's great, Ion, because, as you know, I'm already working on that one.
We know.
Cool. I just wanted to note that for Bob. That was Ion just nailed something that we're doing here.
Yeah.
So anyway, I want to go. Okay, let's get back to this. So I want to work with it right now, the way we set it up, with the C being the negative on the x-axis there, and now we're on.
You want to do it that way? You better. You bet. Before you go into grad school, you better get your underclassmen stuff done. Go back to your A on the top, B on the bottom, and C to the right. So if you get that, then you can...
Wait a minute. Whoa, B is on the top. A is below.
I understand, but that's going to be further. It's okay, but you're going to get a little bit ahead of yourself. If you could get the first visual, it would soothe you more easily.
Okay.
Before you start changing it.
No, I wasn't going to change it. I was just leaving it. I was saying, let's leave it the way it is and move on to the time aspect now.
Okay, from the B being over A?
Correct.
Okay. Very good.
Hey, Chad, change the B so it's a less amount, so it's below the A.
Okay.
You're going to do it AB. Just change the figure so it's less than 96.
It really will help you get the visual.
Oh, okay. No problem. I'll move that one down to 800. So that would
Fine.
Be 80 or 800.
Fine.
So we've got A at 960, B at 800 below it, and then we've got the C over on the right at 1400.
Fine. That's wonderful. And you've now you'll need to pull a second tangent, which will now become your B1A1 tangent, which is a line segment that intersects your AC, BC line segments to form yet another triangle, okay? And this line should be parallel to your Y-axis since your AB is on the Y.
I don't get what to do next.
Okay. You got to draw another tangent that's parallel
to
your...
Yeah, but I'm not plotting points again. I've got a triangle.
No.
I'm not plotting my
You got
points.
Your triangle, that's right, but you got to... That's the triangle. Now you got to get the tangent, the future space of time that you're gauging so you can find out what the A2 value is going to be in the future in 14 days.
Okay, so I'm working with the AB tangent?
No, you're creating the B1A1 tangent, which is a line segment that's going to be as long as your your X-axis is, and it should be parallel.
Ah, okay. So
you're making a box.
It would be on the...
It'd be very close to C, and just draw a straight line, and you're going to make the B1A1 tangent, but you're also, when it intersects your other two line segments, you're going to create a smaller triangle inside the larger triangle where you'd have now two angles, the C value, you'd have C and C2 value that they would just share that same angle.
Okay, hold on. So I'm drawing a line, and it starts at 0, 0, 0, right? Where does the line start?
At what you want to give your future value of time.
See, you should start over again.
Okay.
Just review the state.
Okay. You have 3 points, A, B, C.
Yes.
You've plotted A, B, and C, correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
No,
okay.
Where did he get the C? He placed that on based on the value.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's got his big triangle on his graph paper. Now, he knows that AB line segment, which right now is exactly on the Y-axis, is
right.
The tangent. But now that Y is longer than the line segment AB, correct?
You mean, okay, if I go from... my highest plotted point on the y-axis?
No,
down.
go as far as that line will go, straight up. And get
okay,
20 pieces
get
of paper and tape it to that and keep going up. That axis goes all the way up and all the way down. But you have a line segment, AB, that is the tangent that's also on that axis of y, correct? But y-axis is longer than that line segment inclusively, correct?
Oh, correct.
Well, that's the same thing we're saying here. Okay, now that's your first tangent. And now inside your triangle of your 3 points, you're going to create yet another, call it another y-axis, but it's really not. But it's a line segment that you'll choose to gauge your future value of time. So if you want to, you can come over one block or two blocks, and on that graph line, draw another, be almost like another y-axis, all the way straight up and down, parallel to your original AB tangent.
Okay, hold on, freeze. So it goes on my x-axis, I would go over, just arbitrarily say, let's go 2 days. So that would bring me to 200 on my x-axis. Now I draw a line straight up.
That's fine, but it's gonna for the pictorial. It's gonna be better if it makes the new triangle much smaller. So it'd
so
be
closer,
better to come
closer
off.
To C.
Yes, Yes. So if you were going to do that for your visual, we'd say take 2 off of the 1400.
Okay, sure.
Okay, that makes it easier because then you'll get the picture. And then once that picture's in your head, then all bets are off. Then you can do what you want to, but to get the visual first.
Okay.
Got it? Okay, good. Okay.
Got it.
Now, you have the, now that new tangent, that's labeled as B1, A1, because your original tangent is AB. So you invert it.
So my original tangent would be A1, B1?
No, that's just AB.
Just AB, okay.
Uh-huh. And your second tangent is A1, B1, because you invert it. Now, in just as a point of order, you realize if you were going the other way, it would be the opposite. If you have a BA tangent, then this would be an A1, B1 tangent. You invert it if you do. You see?
Right. If I had, you mean if I had it the way I did originally, where my B was above
yeah.
A?
Yeah, then, but so that way it always works. Because now, even though you have it inverted, as long as it's whatever you do, it's whatever you do on the opposing side, if it's always inverted, then it'll always equal.
Okay.
So then your variables can be calculated.
Okay, just for the sake of making this easier for me to visualize, my 800 value on the X, I want to bring that down so I get a larger angle down at C because right now my angle is just too small.
Fine.
So I'm going to move my 800 value. I'm moving my 800 value down to 500.
That's fine. That's fine. So it's easier for you to see what we're talking about. But you know once you get the visual and the formula, that won't matter anymore. But you got to get the plain geometry side of it in your head so you know what you're trying to calculate, too.
Okay, great. So I've got my B1, A1 tangent.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Good.
So.
Okay, now you got to label your new triangle.
Okay.
So you have now created yet another 3 angles where on the smaller triangle, your C value would remain the same, obviously. And then on your AC line segment, you now have a tangent that intersects. And so that angle in the small triangle would be known as A2.
Okay. Yep.
And on your BC line segment, that same tangent intersects it as well. So the interior angle of that mark would be labeled B2.
Okay.
Now, do you get this? We had A, and we have used then, you have AB tangent, you have a B1, A1 tangent, and now you have the new angles of A2, B2, and C2.
Yes.
Within the smaller triangle.
Yes.
And the reason for that is, so you can find out what A is 2, A to B.
So I can find out what A is 2. So I want to find out what A2 is.
Yeah, because if you know what A is and you want to know what A is to B, to BE in the future, then A2 will be the solution to your equation.
Okay.
Is that fucked up or what? Now take that to a statistician and see how they work it out. It's sort of boogering them up a little bit. But
yeah.
It makes it simple from a sighted position. All right. Now you've created 2 tangents. You have AB and you have B1, A1.
Yeah.
Now, if you look at that, look at it as 2 sides of a box. Forget the triangle for the moment.
Yeah.
All right. Now, that is a segment. Let's call that a segment of, wait for it, time.
The whole box is time?
Yeah.
Well,
2 sides of the box is time because that's what you're gauging is your future experience of time.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's the reason you have to have the second tangent, is you've got to have a limitation. Otherwise, it would give you every value of that currency from the Canadian dollar to the U.S. dollar forever. Well, that wouldn't be beneficial if you're trying to pinpoint next week's trading price.
Yeah.
So now you got two parallel. They must be parallel. Now, we don't care how the AB tangent is, as long as your B1A1 is parallel to it, because that's the way time plays.
Right.
So it makes no difference which angle that AB actually is, as long as you're parallel to it, because that's the way y'all play time.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, now, you have now almost in your mind erased the big triangle for the moment. Now what you're looking at is a space of time. Okay, rent's due in 30 days. Okay, I'm here in 30 days, rent's going to be again. And that rent's going to be what it was agreed or arranged, an amount agreeable to, and that's how much it cost for that span of time. Okay? And that's the way you divide that, just for your picture. Okay, now you have an A value and a B value, remember, on your original tangent. And
yep.
You know where it plots on the X and Y value. So that A value on the AB tangent, you have an X and Y value, and you have a number that you could pull a sine and a cosine wave from.
Yeah, because I have the A angle and the B angle?
Well, you could do it with the A angle, but you're also going to do it with the B angle as well. Now, when you have the X and Y value of A, and you pull the sine and the cosine of that value that's pre-known of A, what you're going to notice is that you're going to have a sine and cosine wave that will be going from the left toward the right, which is towards your future experience of time.
Yeah.
So that A angle would basically, if you have two sides of a box, and then you have two wavy, or maybe one double helix with the sine cosine value, going from your AB line, AB tangent to your B1A1 tangent. So the top of the box would be two wavy peaks and sets of peaks and troughs.
So from my first tangent to my B1A1 tangent,
yep.
Is how many phases are there? Like how many peaks?
Well, that depends. That depends on what your sine and cosine value is.
Oh, okay.
See? That's the only thing there is to calculate, you see. There could be 100, there could be 2. There could be
okay.
20. It just depends, see? It just depends on where those sine and cosine values intersect.
But when okay, so I want to know the sine and cosine values of the big triangle first?
No. No, no,
just
no.
Just of A.
Just of A.
Okay.
Now, and you start that from that angle, from that point of the angle, where
yeah.
the angle is attached to the tangent, you start your sine wave and your cosine wave from that A point.
Right. So my A sine would be where my A value is.
Yes.
On the
That's
y
where it
axis.
Begins. That's where the wavelength begins.
That's where the sine begins. And then the cosine would be, that would depend where that is.
Well, no, it would be, it would start it, regardless of, you just pull the cosine of it, and then start that cosine from your point of A.
Start the cosine from the point of A, and then the offset between the sine and the cosine is determined by the relationship between sine and cosine in general.
Your proportion, see,
proportion.
Of where they intersect.
Okay.
Or your pitch. That's what you call pitch. Okay?
Yep.
All right, now that pitch means that the value of the sine and cosine, which of course will not be identical because one's a sine and one's a cosine, the points where they intersect, whether it be in the peak or the trough, makes no difference. But where they intersect, you have to go dot, there's a point, dot, there's a point, dot, there's a point, there, dot. Every single place they intersect, how many times they intersect between your AB tangent and your B1A1 tangent.
Mm-hmm.
You want to know the number of times they intersect. Now, it is righteous that they may not intersect at all. It's possible.
Okay.
Depending on the value, there is possibility for them not to intersect at all. But if they do, whether it be one time or 1,000 times, that number is significant between those two tangents. So you're going to want to plot that sine cosine wave to see the number of times it intersects between those two line segments. Now, you only have to go from the first tangent to the second tangent because, as you know, that frequency is going to go on well past that original second tangent. Okay?
Right.
But you're only interested in the between the two.
Yep. So then let's say there's three intersections.
Got it.
Between those
okay,
two
now
lines.
You now wait now. All right, now there's three intersections from one tangent to the second tangent. That's significant. You want that value, that number. Okay. Now. Now you're going to do the exact same thing to your B value.
Okay. I'm going to pull a sine and cos off my B value.
That's
on the big
correct.
Triangle.
And you count the number of times it intersects between the two tangents. No problem. Okay. Now, next, you got to see. Here we go. Now we're going to bring the triangle back into the equation. Once you have those plotted, then you connect your AB tangent to your ACBC line segment. You create an overlaying triangle over these two sets of wavelengths. Okay?
Whoa. I'm creating another triangle over.
No, you're not. Remember, we with your imagination, we removed them while we were creating the top and the bottom of a box. That triangle was there all along. We just didn't give it any relativity for that moment.
So we're bringing the same one back in?
Yes, the identical same triangle back, which was really there all along. Now, in your AC line segment and your BC line segment, that fits on your graph, does it not?
A to C and B to C are graphs.
A to
yeah.
C and B to C is a that makes up your triangle with your AB tangent. Okay, now you have plotted your sine cosine of A, your sine cosine of B. Well, now that makes a length, a wave pattern towards your second tangent. Okay. Well, now with those line segments in geometry, you would look very closely to see if any of your sine, cosine, intersecting points fall within your original triangle that you plotted.
Okay, so I first of all, I counted the number of intersections between the two tangents, and now I'm getting a second value of how many intersections.
No. Well, you're getting, it's not a second value. What you're doing is you're noticing if any of those the intersections that you've already counted, if they would be graphed inside or outside of the triangle.
Ah, okay.
Okay. Now, let's say you had 10 intersections from tangent to tangent. Okay.
Yep.
And let's say three of those fell intersections occurred plotted inside the triangle.
Mm-hmm.
That's significant. You plot every place that those angles would occur. So if you have 10 and your sine cosine that are intersecting, which of course with the frequency, well, proximity of those peaks and troughs, then you see you're going to have that. They'll intersect always at the same place. But it's the number of places that they intersect. Well, if you have three that intersect inside the triangle, that's significant. You got that?
Yeah.
Now and then, now remember you had 10 within
Yep.
the tangents,
Yep.
and that's important. But the ones you're focusing on are the ones that fall plot inside the triangle. And here's what you do. With your A, now you can guess we're going to do this with B also, but with your A, if you have 3 points and they have plottable values, correct?
Within the okay, you said within A. What does that
Correct.
mean?
With, well, within the triangle from your sine and cosine of A. So in your
Oh,
formula,
okay, my sine
A.
and cosine waves regarding A. Okay.
That's correct.
Yeah.
If you have from your two tangents, if you have 10 points that intersect 10 times within the two tangents, that's significant. Okay, if within those 10 intersection points, if 3 of them fall inside your original triangle, you take those plotted 3 points and multiply those times themselves. Because see, you, now wait, we know what you're
One
going to
sec,
say.
I have to clarify this. And we're
Well,
talking
that's what
about
we're going to make.
the intersection of sine and cosine for A and sine of cosine for B,
Yeah.
any time that any of those run into each other, not just A or B.
No. Well, anytime any of them run into each other, when you plot them, if they're inside the triangle, you multiply A's sine and cosine times themselves.
Multiply A sine and cosine by themselves.
No, Matt, no, Chad. Listen now. You have a sine cosine, and they're going in a wave.
Yeah.
Okay? Those waves intersect on the on the pitch, depending on how high the peak and how low the trough will. It can be a varying number. The frequency, megahertz free or hertz frequency, of that wavelength, that sine and cosine value are going to intersect.
Right.
So,
Inside the triangle,
well,
we're
you
focused
plot
on
them
the.
all. You plot
Yeah.
them all because see, that's a vibration. But even then, even that vibration, it would be able to plot on a graph each time it intersects as a value.
Yes. Okay, I get
Okay?
it. Yeah.
Yeah. So if it does it 10 times, it intersects 10 times, and 3 of those times are fall, those intersections occur inside your original ABC triangle, then, if that's the case, then you multiply the first 3 points, or those points that intersect inside the triangle, those values, times themselves.
Okay, the points, multiply the points times themselves. So wouldn't the point be an x and y value, or do you mean the sine
No,
value?
you would attach a value. No, that value, it would be on the graph where it
Oh, the
falls on the
values,
graph.
like the value of the dollar, for example, the Canadian dollar.
Precisely. If you had that at A, and then the sine cosine of that intersects at a certain point, it would be a plus or minus value that would from that would be a repeating frequency. But that's frequency. Now you're converting frequency back to flat linear geometry or time.
Okay, hold on. So when there's an intersection inside the triangle, and you say multiply the value times itself, I'm only interested in the y-axis value.
Well, that would be appropriate. That would be appropriate, but you would actually plot if you had two intersecting frequencies. And they would be dot. Well, that dot would be multiplied to give you actually a value. You would take where it is in relationship to A. So if you did it by the X and the Y, which you certainly could, no problem, you'd know what that value is in the repeating point within a line segment. So either way, it's all right. But if we're just wanting you to see. We've got ahead
No,
of
just
you.
tell me the simplest way to do it
Okay.
rather than my example's convoluted then.
You're fine. You're fine. You're fine. If you have a wavelength and you take a frequency wave and you plot it on a flat piece of paper, okay, everywhere that intersects, put a dot.
Yep.
Okay. And everywhere that dot falls, that would be in, within an X and a Y proximity of your original value of A.
Yep.
Okay. And if A is 0,
mm-hmm.
and then what did you say, 96 or 96, 960, whatever you said, your Y,
mm-hmm.
okay, then look at it again from the position of how many dots fall inside the triangle and plot that as X and Y
yep.
in proportion to your value. And you'll get a number. The value of X and Y equals blah, blah, blah in that that you've plotted, okay? Now, if that happens...
Wait a minute.
Times,
so would I be multiplying X times Y?
You could. You certainly could.
What's the easier way?
To have your calculator get the intersecting points and tell you what those points or coordinates equal.
Okay, so this is when the calculator starts to come in.
It does. It helps.
Yeah.
But we want you to see the process. If you had if you had a graph, let's just say that it is a graph of how much a gallon of gasoline cost, you'd do it over and over and over and over and over. And it would then hit within and outside your market range. Well, if it hits three times and it's close to that price, if it's a, let's say it's a dollar and a dollar and a dollar five from where it falls, then you multiply a dollar times a dollar times a dollar and five. Ever how many points that are inside the triangle, you multiply. And you get a big number, obviously, or a number, okay?
But I work on each, so if there's 3 points in the, within the triangle of these crossings?
Yeah. If they intersect
each,
inside
yeah,
the
but
triangle.
For, I get that, but for each point, I multiply the point by itself?
Yes, because it's a value.
Okay.
It is a value. And it's a significant part of triangulation because it falls inside your triangulatable position.
Okay, and the way that I arrive at the value of that crossing point is on the calculator, because, noting the distance from that crossing to my A point on the y-axis.
That's perfect. That's very fine. So what that tells you then is if you have a very, very high peak and trough, that's
mm-hmm.
going to have a significant to do with what your number value is going to be, whether it be a large number or a small number. Okay? Because let's say you got it as 80. What if your value is at 80 and you got 80 times, and there's 10 times that it hits, you got 8, it'd be 80 cubed or 80 to the 10th power. That's going to be a big number, you see. Okay, now when you get the points that are inside the triangle, ever how many they are, you multiply them times themselves, then you divide by the total number of intersecting points between the two tangents.
Got it. Okay.
So,
that was our
so
ten,
now
ten,
if, it, if
ten
there's
in that
a big...
Case, say all of
yeah,
them. Yeah.
Yeah, and if there's a big number and you have a high peak and trough, there's going to be a great number of points of intersection between the two tangents, so it divides it back close to your range in the beginning. Not necessarily, but more times than not. Okay?
Okay.
Now, you do the exact same thing for your B angle that you just did with A. Pull your sine and cosine. Now you see it's all going to be, the first one would be primarily from the troughs. Because remember your AC and BC line segments are going smaller towards C.
Okay, so just freeze for a second. So when we talked about the sine and cosine waves up until now, we were only talking about A's sine
mm-hmm.
and cosine. We didn't bring B.
And now you
sine
do the exact same process that you did with A with B.
Yes, okay.
Okay, and that would be if you took the triangle away for 1 second again, you'd find that you have created a bottom of the box. Remember your original two tangents were the left and right, and your top was the wavy sine cosine? Well, now you're going to make a wavy sine cosine that'll be the bottom of the box.
The wavy sine and cosine from B will be the bottom of the box?
Yeah. Yeah, because it'll be from your B value over towards your new tangent, so it would be the equivalent to looking at it without a triangle involved. It would look like a box with
yeah.
a wavy two-line top and a wavy two-line bottom. So you have a big square
yeah.
geometric shape.
So the bottom of the box would be at 500 where my B value is plotted on Y?
That's where you begin your sine cosine points. Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Now, you look at this. Now, the peaks are what more than likely are going to intersect inside the triangle, correct?
In this case, with B, yeah.
Exactly. So you count the number of intersecting points in tandem, in total, from your first tangent to your second tangent. Count how many they are. Then that imaginary triangle that went away for a moment that now is back, you notice if there are any that intersect inside the triangle.
Yeah.
And you do it the same way. And if there are three, or let's just say there's two this time, whatever, and you plot those values as you would as in a regular line geometry, even though they're a wavelength, you can still get a plottable value, dot, dot. And then you look and you go, okay, there are 10 points across. So you multiply the two dots together. Then you divide by the number of pitches that intersect.
Yes.
Okay. And that equals a value. Now you have a value for A. Now you have a value for B, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Now, you do. Now, don't forget, we've still got C we haven't dicked with yet.
Yeah.
So now what you do is you take C and you take the minus sine and the minus cosine of the value of C. And remember, now this would be y is going to equal whatever, and x is going to equal 0. Remember?
Y and x is going to be 0?
Well, because it's on the x-axis, remember? Remember your C was plotted on your x-axis?
Yeah, so why would x be 0?
Because it's going to be on the x-axis. Why?
Wouldn't that mean y is 0?
Oh, I'm sorry. The way you're looking at it, yes. Okay,
yeah.
That's fine. Y would be 0, and x would be whatever that is. Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
But you have both coordinates, so you can get a minus sine, minus cosine. Now, those wavelengths that you would plot go back toward your original AB line segment, do they not?
Yes.
Good. Now you do the exact same thing. Now, this time, what happens is you're plotting this, and it's going to be basically in the middle, per se, of your segment coming back. Now, this point where you have to draw the peaks and the troughs of C.
Yep.
You notice any intersections, either from the peak or the trough, dot, 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 because many times it may intersect multiple points in the peak and the trough within the coordinates of the triangle, correct?
But we're doing basically generally the same thing. It's just running the opposite
in reverse
direction.
But it's
yeah.
going to give you – but wait now. It's a more significant than that, because actually what that's going to do is – once you get those points, it's actually going to set your new X and Y value. Because, now get this, this is where you're going to like this. What you're actually doing is you began with your formula based on what your X and Y values were when you plotted your original points. But now you're talking about X and Y now being reset by what the future experience is to be.
Which XY is going to be reset?
The new, the one, the XY that your B1, A1 tangent would be in retrospect regarding.
Okay. Yeah.
See, now, this is where this is just fucking brilliant. If you can get this. You know what A
Hey, Chad. Chad, fine.
Okay.
Do not let Ion go off about what's going to happen. He's trying to go into, now this will be really, now then you'll be able to do this. And be, oh, go back. See, I don't want to hear about what's going to happen.
Well, he's going to, that was just an advertisement, I think.
Yeah, well, it'll waste time. We're over an hour.
No, he's
you
not
want to hear
that,
Ion
no,
telling about what you can do when you figure this out, or would you like to figure out how it's done?
Oh, I want to know how it's done at this moment. I know.
All right, don't let Ion run off and start telling you what's going to happen when you do figure it out.
Oh, no, no, Ion, tell me, continue explaining the triangulation I'm doing visually on the chart.
You take your C value, you find the points that intersect in the peak and the trough, plot them, okay, and count the number of times they repeat back to your original AB tangent. Okay.
Yes.
You then do the same calculations, only this time you're creating a new line segment. The new line segment will be the new X value of your graph.
The new X value of my graph. You mean it'll be the new tangent that we
no.
drew for B1, A1?
No. No, 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 no. No, 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 no. It won't be a new tangent. It'll be the new X value. If it was going to be a tangent, it would be your Y. But you've got your new Y. You want to know the tangent. You've got the future tangent of A2 of the B1, A1 tangent. But you don't have is the new X variable that affects the future.
Oh, what is, okay, explain what the X value is. Is it going to be perpendicular or parallel to
no.
B1, A1
yeah.
at all? No.
No, it'll be perpendicular to B1, A1. It'll
oh,
be
yeah.
perpendicular to AB, B1, A1. But look what you've done. It will be parallel to your X axis.
Ah, so it'll give me a value. It'll tell me the value of that currency on that that tangent. Of
well, from your new, you have your A point that's given, and if you know the future X and Y value, the correct juxtaposed position of the X and Y value, then you absolutely can calculate with the new horizon of the X axis, and you have your formula for A2. You can calculate exactly what the future value of A2 will be.
And so the value, the formula for getting the X, the new X value,
mm-hmm.
is, did you already give it to me? Is that complete? Is that where I'm taking
mm-hmm.
the crossings and?
Yeah.
Yeah.
From your minus okay. sine and cosine, and that's all you do.
Okay, hold
beach.
On. Okay. So I've got my sine and cosine crossings for A, and I've got a value because I've multiplied them by them, each one of them by themselves.
Do.
So I have, okay.
Okay.
The
and then you
value.
Divided, and then you divided that by the number
by
of
by the total number of crossings. Okay.
That's
so then
that
I did
you,
that for I did that for A, I did that for yep. B, I did that for C, but C is negative. Okay.
Well, and, C's negative, but the points where they graph will not be known
will not
as
be
negative.
Will not be negative.
You're just
right.
setting the new X value. So now you have the A point and that equals to, and you have the new B point that equals to. Now you'll do the same thing with C, which will be minus, but now you've got to get a tetrad to get you like triangulation. In order for triangulation to work, you got to be inside the triangle. So you need a fourth point, you see.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's
now,
the new X? That's the new X?
That's the new X. Now,
okay.
if they
hold on one second. Hold on. So within A, I've got my crossings, and I've multiplied them. multiplied each one of them by themselves.
Right.
So that gives me 3 in our case, right?
But then that's divided by the number of points.
By the number, of course.
Total.
Okay. So I've got my
one
divided,
value.
Right, my divide number for my A sine cos, my B sine cos, my C sine cos, and now we're getting to the new x using those. So
yep.
Explain.
And when you have the new x, that changes all your values. You look at your values. You've plotted them geometrically, have you not?
Yeah. Yeah.
And now you've created a new x-axis, have you not?
Yes. Oh, wait a minute. No. Hey, whoa. So I've got these 3 values for my A, my B, and my C. How do I get mm-hmm. from that to this x-axis? This new x.
You with the C value, that's what we were trying to get excited telling you how to do it, and Bob didn't want to hear about it.
Well, that was good, though, because now I get everything so far, so continue.
Okay. So the minus C position, you're going to be in a different position going backward
yeah.
towards your original tangent. The peaks and troughs, the distance between the peaks and troughs, would be where your new x-axis is regarding the equation. Okay?
The distance between the peaks and troughs?
Yes.
We've got...
The intersecting points of
six,
your
seven,
minus
peaks and troughs.
So say it again now.
So we have 3 pairs of peaks and troughs.
Total. That's correct.
Okay, so how do I draw
but the
value?
But the one you're worried about is the C.
Oh,
the one
so
you're
just
interested
using
in is the C.
The C peaks and troughs. So am I just
yep.
getting what their amplitude is, and that becomes my
you
x-axis?
Would. Well, the distance, that exact distance would be. But now you also do the same thing you did with A, B, and C.
Mm-hmm.
You'll notice if there are any intersecting points within the original triangle. But those points, then, you do the exact same way. You do it exactly the same way. But the center, the median point, would be done of exactly in the middle would be your new x value.
The new x value is exactly in the middle of what?
The peaks and the intersecting points of the peaks and troughs of the minus sine and cosine of C.
Ah, so it's almost like I've got a completely new graph. But
and that
the
completely
new, the new zero. So the new zero crossing for my new graph is based on this new x.
It's what you base the new values of A2, B2, C2, God damn it.
So I just take what I did in the first one and apply it up, copy it up into the new set of x, y axis.
That's correct. But now we told you, remember, if there's any point within that triangle where you have a convergence, where everything magically merges, if there's one point where A sine cosine, B sine cosine, C minus sine minus cosine, if there's any point where they all 3 intersect exactly, then that's your at value of A2. Period, and you plot that. But that won't always
happen.
That's
the value, that's the value of A2?
Yeah, if it does. But you'll find that it's rare for all of those to converge precisely. But it's not. It does in the angel chart, and those plotted values in the angel chart, those are the answer with where it falls in that triangulated position. Now, you sent this out to everybody on the Wikipedia, the tetrad of your points, 3 points in a triangle we call it a tetragon.
Yeah.
You have that picture because you've got to be in some proximity within that triangle in order to triangulate. Okay?
Yes.
So for many points, that convergence point is your answer. You are here, and here's how you'll get to be there, okay? But that works because you've reset the x value. But you've got to be within that point. Now, in order for this to work for monies,
mm-hmm.
in order for this to work for monies, you will want to gauge it by some other variable to place you in that proximity of the point. Now, if you're going to do this with currencies, Chad, you would use the value of what they're paying on a CD rate at, well, let's say, Maybank, well, because that's the one to use. Because if you look the data up at Maybank, it's a day ahead, always. So it's closer to the new x-axis. So if you don't have intersecting points that are identical, okay, that are identical, then and you have a new x value, and you have points that you have a value for A that you calculate, a value for B that you calculate, and a minus value for C that you've calculated, but they would be in a plus format in relation from your original AB tangent.
Okay, and you say those three values for A, B, and C, that's based on the crossing, the crossovers, and then taking the crossovers inside the triangle, dividing them by the total number of crossings.
And you've set a new, you've triangulated your position in the triangle. Now you want to take this formula and you want to go A over B divided then by C times your value of a certificate of deposit at, say, Maybank for the same length of time that you're talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's 14 days, you'd find out what the rate they're paying on a 14-day CD, which is easy done online, a value. And the reason we chose Maybank is because if you look up a Maybank daily rate, it's a day ahead.
So it's closer to the new X, yeah.
Well, no, it's what you could then divide by the new X because you have a day's gain. They're already in the future.
Okay.
Do you see? So, if you know, you don't have to be fucking brilliant to figure what the price of a Canadian dollar to a U.S. dollar was a month ago, do you?
No.
Well, this works exactly the same way in reverse.
Right. So using this, it'll be just as easy to know, you know, the value 14 days from now as it is to find out the value in the past.
That is exactly correct. And if you played this out, say, for the yen the week before the earthquake, you would notice that those wavelengths would be amazingly, gregariously off. And your A2 value would be, instead of 89, be 129 to a U.S. dollar. Well, you'd have made with a $100 trade, you'd have made a fortune.
Now, is that because the future is leaving echoes in the past, which is our now?
Well, they're only now. Yes.
Okay.
See, they're only now. So all you're doing is the very thing that we've been pushing against and blowing apart since itch was that time is a false premise and there is no time. There's timing, but there is no time. Since it's a false premise, you very easily can calculate what its future value is. Because your X value, your X axis, because you hit on it the other day when you were lost not knowing the X and Y. Well, we couldn't say you don't know X and Y because you haven't calculated X yet. But we're not talking about the value of X as in a linear path. We're talking about the value of X as it engages with vibration.
Yeah. And that's
so basically, you could have that intersecting point and draw if they all converge in one point, just like it does in the angel diagram. Then at that point, you could take your pencil on that point and draw a straight line to A, a straight line to B, and a straight line to C, making your tetragon. Okay, and from that position, it would also be the way you would linearly draw the top portion of the top picture of a pyramid.
A pyramid with three at the base, though.
That's correct.
Yeah.
A pyramid with three at the base. From the flat linear version of it, you see. But now if you add dimension to it, now, of course, you're having a different conversation. But it works either way because, see, vibration goes in all directions, per se. The frequency, repetitive of the frequency. But when you get that new point and then you find out what the new X is, make that divisible by the number of days of a CD rate. If you're talking about currency, now you would do, if you were going to do this with pork bellies or corn, you wouldn't use the Maybank value. What you'd use is the commodity price, what the futures price is.
Right.
Okay.
So basically, once I have my new X, I'm taking what I did with my original X and Y axis.
And plotting those values, and you can then find out what the value of A2 is precisely the same way you use the original value of A to come to the new plottable condition.
Yeah, and we're not talking about just extending it parallelly. We're talking about replotting my A, B, and C just on a different axis.
That's exactly right, because they're all variables for future are inclusive, are they not?
All variables for future are inclusive? Why? Because of what we
did
with the form?
Well, they may, if you do, okay, let's say you do Canadian dollar to the U.S. dollar and do it in a year.
Yeah.
There is the possibility that there would be no more Canadian dollar or no more U.S. dollar within that A2 range in a year. So if you were to calculate that, you'd find that the value between a Canadian dollar and a U.S. dollar would be zero. Then you'd know that there won't be either a Canadian dollar or a U.S. dollar in your future set of time.
You mean they won't exist? You mean
right.
They won't exist?
Right. Many currencies have fallen away and gone to nothing. You could calculate, you got double points before the euro came on the scene. You could count before they started a euro and find out from an 85 cents to a 165, that spread just by vibration alone.
But if I take, you know, when I have my new axis and I replot the points, if I notice that there's just no change,
then
does
it's flat that, and it'll be the same price in 7 days. Within
but that
a
doesn't mean it doesn't exist
pit.
Anymore. It just means there's
But that's not what you said. We're saying if you plot it and your value doesn't cross anywhere, and it is though your new calculation for A2 is 0.000, then that's telling you that one of those currencies will no longer be traded.
Huh, okay. But does it tell me which one will be traded?
Whichever your A value is.
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay.
Okay, that's it, Chad.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's good. Now play with
that
from the visual, and then you can apply it to the weather, temperature.
Yep.
Flowers blooming, tomatoes growing, everything.
Yep.
Digestion.
Very good. Digestion, yeah.
It's great fun. Therefore, we are totally, happily, deliciously, forever incomplete.